If you have ever sat in front of a notebook at 9 in the morning with a coffee cooling on the desk and a query running on a cluster somewhere far away, then you already know the feeling I want to describe. You hit the run button. The little spinner appears. You wait. 5 seconds, then 10, then 20. The spinner is still spinning. You have not yet read a single row of data. You have not yet computed a single number. The query you typed, a query so simple it might fit on the back of a receipt, has not begun. What is happening in those 20 seconds is that a fleet of machines in a data center somewhere in Virginia or Oregon is waking up. They're loading software. They're warming up their fake chips. They are unrolling their imaginary processors, the way a person unrolls a sleeping bag in the cold before any work can be done. Then, finally, the spinner stops and your query begins to run. The first numbers appear. You exhale. You write a second query, a small one, a Python function that goes row by row through your data and computes a custom score. The function is 10 lines long. It is the kind of thing that, if you ran it on your laptop against the same number of rows, would take about a second. On the cluster, with the full power of 40 machines behind you, it takes 90 seconds. You stare at the wall. You begin to wonder whether you have done something wrong. You have not done something wrong. You have just made contact for the first time with a price tag your company has been quietly paying for years. It has a name in the engineering folklore of the industry. It is called the JVM tax. At the end of the month, the cluster bill arrives. $42,000. Your chief financial officer asks why a linear regression on 200 gigabytes of customer data costs as much as a senior engineer's monthly salary. You do not have a clean answer. You suspect that most of the money was not spent computing anything. You are right. This is Rust, gently, a patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 30, What Spark Actually Costs. Today, I want to give you an honest accounting of what running Apache Spark, the dominant analytical data tool of the last 15 years, actually costs the businesses that use it. I will not be vague. I will name 5 specific costs with numbers attached, drawn from published engineering posts by the people who built and maintained Spark itself. By the end, you will know exactly what the JVM tax is, why it is so stubborn, and why a generation of engineers in 2026 are starting to look for a way out. Let me build up the context. Last episode, we walked through how Spark came to be. A graduate student at Berkeley, in the autumn of 2009, sketched an idea on top of Hadoop, wrote it in a Java family language called Scala, donated it to the Apache Software Foundation, and watched over the next decade as it ate the corporate analytical world. Spark is today the workhorse behind every bank, every major retailer, every advertising platform of any size. The company that commercialized it, Databricks, is worth $134 billion. The library called PySpark, the Python binding for Spark, is what almost every working data scientist actually types into their notebook. The reason all of this matters for this episode is that Spark inherited every property of the JVM, every gift, and every cost. 2 episodes ago, we walked through what those costs are. Startup time, memory overhead, garbage collection pauses. We talked about them in the abstract. Today we look at them in the wild, at scale, where they stop being theoretical and start being line items on invoices. Cost 1 is startup time. Every Spark cluster behind the scenes is a collection of machines, each running what is called an executor, and each executor is 8 JVM. Spinning up 1 JVM takes, even on a fast machine, somewhere between 1 and 5 seconds. A real cluster has dozens to hundreds of executors. A single cold start before any of your actual code runs can take 5 to 30 seconds. For a daily batch job that runs at 3 in the morning, this does not matter. For a human sitting at a notebook, hitting run, waiting for the first cell to come back, it matters enormously. The interactive feel of working with data, the feel that turns thinking into discovery, is broken by every cold start. People learn, after a few weeks, to leave their clusters running, which costs money, or to accept the delay, which costs patience. The delay is structural. It cannot be removed without changing the fundamental architecture. Cost two is garbage collection. I told you two episodes ago that the JVM includes a component called the garbage collector, the piece of software that quietly reclaims memory when objects are no longer in use. The collector has gotten better over the years. There are five or six different ones to choose from, each with different trade-offs. None of them is free. When the collector runs, it does so by pausing the program, sometimes briefly, sometimes for a long time, to walk through every object in memory and figure out which ones can be thrown away. For most Java software, the pauses are short enough to ignore. For Spark, they are not. Data Bricks itself published in May of 2015 an engineering post on tuning the garbage collector for Spark applications. Inside that post, in plain language, was the acknowledgement that the cost of garbage collection becomes problematic when it consumes more than 10 to 15% of total execution time. That is a remarkably high bar to call problematic. Independent operators have documented production Spark jobs spending 30 to 50% of their wall clock time inside the garbage collector. In streaming applications, where deadlines matter, a 30-second stop-the-world pause arriving at the wrong moment can cause data loss, or alarms, or both. The garbage collector is not the program you wrote. It is overhead, and in a meaningful fraction of Spark jobs, it consumes a third of the bill. Cost three is memory. A piece of data stored inside a JVM is not a tight bag of bytes. Every Java object carries a 16-byte header, a kind of label sewn onto each thing the program is tracking. A simple number, the kind that should fit in 8 bytes, swells, when placed inside a list, to 24 bytes or more, because the JVM has to wrap it in an object to keep track of it. The garbage collector reserves memory for its own bookkeeping. The just-in-time compiler keeps a cache of recently compiled code. The runtime keeps tables. The total memory consumed by a Spark job is consistently 3 to 5 times larger than the same logic written in a systems language like Rust or C++ would consume. Across a 100-machine cluster, billed by the hour, that multiplier is not a footnote. It is most of the cost. Cost 4 is the Python boundary. This one is brutal and underrated. Most working data scientists do not write Scala Spark. They write PySpark. PySpark is Python in front, JVM in back. When a user writes a query, the query runs inside the JVM as Scala code. When a user defines a small function called AUDF, a user-defined function, to do something custom row by row, that function is Python. It cannot run inside the JVM. It has to run in a separate Python process on the same machine. Every row that the JVM wants the Python function to look at has to be serialized, turned into a string of bytes, sent through a pipe, deserialized on the Python side, processed, serialized back, sent back through the pipe, and deserialized on the JVM side. Independent measurements put this serialization tax at 0.5 to 5 milliseconds per row crossing. That number, half a millisecond to 5 milliseconds per row, sounds small until you remember that a Spark job often processes hundreds of millions of rows. Multiply 5 milliseconds by 100 million, and you get 140 hours on a single core of nothing but moving data back and forth between Python and Scala. The official AWS documentation on tuning PySpark notes that, in jobs heavy with these user-defined functions, the cluster's processors run at less than 25% utilization because most of the cores are sitting idle, waiting for the serialization. One published benchmark uppercased 100 million strings through a Python user-defined function in 85 seconds, roughly 7 times slower than the same transformation in pure Spark SQL. There's a partial fix called Apache Arrow, which I will pronounce Apache Arrow, that batches rows into columns and pays a fixed cost per batch instead of per row. It is real. It speeds these jobs up by 10 to 100 times. But it requires the developer to know to use it and to write the function in a particular shape, and many do not. Cost 5 is bill at cluster scale. A Databricks bill is paid in something called DBS, basically machine hours weighted by cluster size. Every job pays JVM startup. Every job pays garbage collection overhead. Every job pays memory overhead. Every job, if the developer wrote Python user-defined functions, pays the serialization border. Databricks' largest customers spend tens of millions of dollars per year on this. And a meaningful fraction of those millions is the JVM tax, not the analytical work. The bill is not because Databricks is greedy. The bill is because the architecture has these costs baked in. There is one more thing worth saying, because it has become a quiet, open secret in the data engineering world. Spark is bad at small data. Spark, the entire architecture, was designed for distribution. Even when you run it on a single laptop against a 1 gigabyte file, you pay for the coordinator and the executor and the serialization layer and the JVM warmup. Practitioners have observed Spark running roughly 10 times slower than a single node tool, like a database called DuckDB or a library called Polars, on data under a terabyte. The irony, the one that keeps engineers awake at night, is that the era of true big data, the era for which Spark was built, turned out to be smaller than anybody expected. Most analytical workloads in 2026 fit on one large machine with a terabyte of memory and 100 cores that costs a few dollars an hour to rent. Spark was built for a world that did not arrive at quite the scale predicted. I want to say one more honest thing before we wrap. None of this is anybody's fault exactly. The Spark team made the right choices for the hardware and the data sizes of 2009. 16 gigabytes of memory was a generous server. Disks were slow. Clusters were the only way. Scala on the JVM was an excellent language for distributed systems in that era, with a mature ecosystem and a respected runtime. The tax we have been describing is not the result of bad engineering. It is the result of architectural choices made 15 years ago, choices that hardened into the foundation of an industry. And that now, in a world where a single machine can hold a terabyte of memory and run 100 parallel cores, look more expensive than they used to. The bill comes due because the world changed, not because the original work was wrong. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that running Spark is not free, and a meaningful fraction of every Spark bill is the JVM tax, the structural overhead of the fake chip Spark is built on, not the analytical work being done. The second is that the tax is real and measurable. Garbage collection pauses 30 to 50% of wall clock in bad cases. Memory overhead, 3 to 5 times the equivalent in a systems language. The Python boundary, 0.5 millisecond to 5 milliseconds per row, the cluster running at under 25% utilization while Python and the JVM pass data back and forth. The third is that Spark is poorly suited to the modern shape of analytical workloads, where most jobs fit on one fat machine and benefit nothing from distribution. Next time on Rust, gently, we meet the alternative. A small team in San Francisco who decided, in late 2023, that the JVM tax was a price the industry no longer had to pay, and who wrote, in Rust, a piece of software that pretends to be Spark, while running 10 times leaner underneath. The episode is called Sail Told Plainly, and it is the heart of this season. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.